It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're going to make our infrastructure modernized, and we're really way behind schedule. We're way behind other countries. We always led the way for many, many years. Then, a number of decades ago, it slowed down. This is a common sense and bipartisan plan that every member of Congress should support.
A word that describes so much of the president's bill, probably about 80% of it, is Trump tolls. The Trump infrastructure plan is like a Hollywood facade. It may look real from afar, but in truth, it's a flat mirage.
That was the President of the United States and Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate. Sandy Rios with you. And of course, the president unveiled his budget yesterday. And in part of it is this plan for infrastructure, which he's been talking about so much. John Roberts has more detail on that, so I'm going to let him tell you. Here he is.
For decades, successive American presidents have talked about rebuilding America's calcifying infrastructure. But other than a few roads and bridges here and there, there's been no coordinated plan to do it. President Trump hopes to change all that, but already there are complaints about a meager federal investment.
And our economic growth.
With the governors of several states and local officials in attendance, President Trump today unveiled his plans to reinvigorate America's aging infrastructure.
As of a couple of months ago, we have spent $7 trillion in the Middle East. $7 trillion. What a mistake. We're trying to build roads and bridges and fix bridges that are falling down. And we have a hard time getting the money. It's crazy.
The plan calls for a total of $1.5 to $1.7 trillion in infrastructure investment. The federal share will be about 13%, $200 billion in seed money for grants and loans. The government will also invest $50 billion in rural infrastructure development, part of which will bring broadband to farms across the nation.
It returns power to the state and local governments who know best what their people need. Washington will no longer be a roadblock to progress. Washington will now be your partner. We'll be your partner.
President Trump pledged to cut federal red tape for permitting and get the process down to 2 years or less. But he warned states they need to step up to the plate as well.
Do we give you money and you can't get your approvals? I guess we're going to have to take that money back or you're not going to build. Because we can't give you money and you're going to take 15 years to get a permit. In one state, took 17 years for a basic roadway to get a permit.
All right, so that's the first part of John Roberts' report last night on Fox. And it is in some ways exciting. I mean, I admit it's exciting to think about rebuilding bridges, roads. There was an interesting report on Fox last night about rebuilding the subway system that goes between New Jersey and New York City, which so many thousands of people, millions really, use daily, and they talked about how it's decaying, showed, you know, pieces of it and parts that are falling apart, and none of us want this. And we don't, our airports, that's something I would know a lot about. They really honestly, when you fly into the airports of New York City, you can understand the public comments that President Trump made when he was running for election about how pathetic they are. They are pathetic, and there are other airports that are in the same kind of disrepair. We would love these things to happen. And part of me gets excited, but I don't get so excited when I think about all the money we are spending. I'm deeply concerned. I just don't know where this is all going to end. And let me just share an article by Daniel Horowitz. And granted, Daniel's a good friend, but Daniel is very, I would say, on the spectrum of opinions. Daniel has the most dire, but he's right. He's not very optimistic. Let me just put it that way. Others, you know, report and they're a little more optimistic. But this is what Daniel has to say, that the GOP's budget, the one that was just passed, that we've discussed so much, that I'm so disgusted with, he said, is a betrayal even worse than you think. And he says, this bill ensures that we will never recover from the debt. He said it made government spending permanent and increased spending to unconscionable levels. He breaks it down this way. You might have heard that the spending is increased by $296 billion for 2 years, but it's much worse. Total spending in this bill is really $419 billion. He also says that this happened so quickly, and it did, that we didn't even have time to really take stock of all that they were passing. Because this, you know, the leadership, Chuck Schumer and, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and Nancy Pelosi have been working together on this, the leadership, for a long time. Not letting, you know, members, certainly conservative members, know what they were doing. And so this is a very vast proposal. So how are people to know? So that's why Daniel is now assessing it. And he's saying the spending is really $419 billion. The supposed $100 billion in spending offsets are not even gimmicks. They actually don't exist. There's more to this, he says. Point two, I'm just giving you the abbreviated version of Daniel's report. We'll put the whole thing on our Facebook page, why the GOP's budget betrayal is even worse than you think. Number two, increased healthcare spending will ensure that we will never restore a consumer-driven market and never fix the debt crisis. And the numbers are a lot worse than the budget score suggests. Once Congress agrees to continue all these programs despite keeping Obamacare, that means they will continue forever, not just for 2 years. And number three, given that spending offsets will never materialize, this bill will add well over $100 billion in net interest payments over the next 10 years to service the higher debt. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget estimates if temporary provisions in the bill were made permanent, the ultimate cost could increase to $1.7 trillion or $2.1 trillion, including interest, and increase in debt to 105% of gross domestic product by 2027. And so that's kind of gives you an idea of the numbers of what we're talking about here. It really is absolutely overwhelming. I would just, interesting last night on Fox during the panel, Brett played a couple of clips. I wanted you to hear President Trump talking about debt when he was on the campaign trail. Let's listen.
We owe $18 trillion. We're going to $21 trillion and ultimately $24, which is a magic word. You know, $24 trillion, that's the magic number. That's like the point of no return. And we're there very quickly. We're going to end up being another Greece, and maybe we're going to end up being another Detroit, because that's where our country is going. We need proper leadership.
We have got to stop spending money we just don't have. We got to cut spending. We got to get this budget deficit under control and get this debt under control.
You recognize that second voice, right? Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, that was in 2012. We got to get this debt under control, and yet he is the worst. You know, it's the House, really, that releases the money. It's the House that determines how money is supposed to spend. Constitutionally, that's their job. And yet they're a freight train running away. And it wasn't that President Trump asked for all the things in the budget. They gave him much more because they gave the Democrats what they wanted plus more. Paul Ryan, as far as I can see, as far as I can remember, has never fought over anything. He's given in to everything. And some argue that that's because he's in concurrence with everything that's happened, that he is not a conservative. How could he be? How could he make that statement in 2012 and then do what he's doing? Just asking. So that's what's happening on the budget deal. Now, let me just say that the other side of this, Mick Mulvaney, the head of the OMB, Office of Money Management, OMB, what is it? Anyway, that's his job, and he's the one that's out in front talking about the budget all the time. He says that President Trump for now has given up on balancing the federal budget in the next 10 years. And Mick says Congress is to blame. He's the budget director, Office of Management and Budget. That's what those letters stand for. He told reporters that legislators didn't make any of the large structural changes he said last year were needed if the administration were to have a chance of reining in the federal deficit. At his confirmation hearing, I'm reading from an article on Fox, hearing in January 2017, Mick Mulvaney called for, quote, fundamental changes in the way Washington spends and taxes. By the way, when he was in the House, he was a fiscal hawk. And so he's, let me just read the rest of this article and it will come back to that point. No one can say the president doesn't take this seriously. He is making tough choices, but he's doing it in a smart way. And he says, instead of following his advice, Mulvaney said Monday, Congress pounded the blank out of me. That was his comment. Unlike last year's budget plan, the fiscal 2019 blueprint unveiled by the Trump administration on Monday does not seek to balance the budget over the next decade. When a questioner at the briefing referred to Mulvaney as a one-time deficit hawk, he shot back, insisting he is still a still-time deficit hawk. Thank you. And then, of course, in past conversations, like one with Chris Wallace on Fox News, he made a statement that the budget deficits can be necessary to spur long-term growth. And he had said earlier that he believed tax cuts, the tax code, was what was holding back the economy. I think they are banking on the economy growing enough that it can absorb these huge expenditures. I don't know. I don't know if it's possible based on what others are saying, but that's the optimistic view of what's happening here. All right, so this is the huge story, really, of the day, though. The Senate has voted on cloture to discuss this DACA immigration bill. And that's actually what we're going to talk about today in just a few minutes with Mark Krikorian. But I want you to hear what Mike Emanuel had to say about it last night on Fox. Let's listen.
We want really tremendous border security, but we have to have Democrat support for DACA. And they are starting that process today. We think there's a good chance of getting DACA done if the Democrats are serious and they actually want to do it.
A hopeful tone from President Trump as the Senate launches debate on the difficult issue of immigration. Today, Republican Senators Grassley, Cornyn, Perdue, Tillis, Lankford, Cotton, and Ernst are rolling out an immigration plan which reflects the president's proposal. It would address the young people brought to this country illegally by their parents, fund border security with a wall, while ending so-called chain migration and the visa lottery. Today, the top Senate leaders noted the challenge ahead, but insisted they can reach a deal.
At every critical moment in this country, we've come together to do what needed to be done to move the ball down the field.
It won't be easy, but we're all going to try because of the gravity of the issues at stake. And because we know that this week will be a test of whether the Senate can steer the ship of state through the stormiest of waters. Now, I believe it can.
All right. So anytime Schumer's in favor of a bill, I'm not so sure about this. I want you to hear the rest of Mike Emanuel's report. Here it is.
The House is another story. Key conservatives are backing a proposal from Judiciary Chairman Bob Goodlatte, which would provide dreamers with three-year renewable permits to live and work in the U.S., but emphasizes border protection and interior enforcement.
I say find an accommodation for them, but no amnesty. We cannot have individuals get in the queue in front of individuals that have been legally working through this process for years.
Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Jordan says it reflects what American voters want.
What they want is border security first. So build the border security wall, in the chain migration, get rid of this crazy visa lottery, do things in a way that make good comments, sanctuary city policy, get rid of those. Do those things first.
A California House Democrat says her side blew it.
It was a real mistake that we didn't use the leverage we had in the last spending bill. We have a couple opportunities coming up, maybe one, and I think we need to continue to use that. And Congress needs to stay there until we get this done.
The politics will be tricky for House leadership. Conservatives are unhappy after last week's spending deal and will be eager to fight on DACA.
All right, that was Mike Emanuel with Fox. And really, honestly, is this the same old, same old? It's a Congress whose leadership is not listening to the people. We're going to get into this next with Mark Krikorian. Have we been down this road before a few times? There was a poll that just came out, issued the White House is touting it. It came from the White House office this morning about how Americans are all on board with President Trump's plan on this. I'm not so sure, but the expert joins me next, Mark Krikorian with Center for Immigration Studies. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, my name's Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome, MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7, so if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
When it comes to the issue of trafficking, it's not just girls that we're talking about. Truth is that even boys are at risk.
Oh my God. We'd be on the bed doing wrong things.
In Mumbai, India, in the red light districts, there are young men like Najish.
I rolled over several times and broke many bones. This scar here on my forehead, this scar is from that night.
It happens every day, and it must stop. And it can. That is why American Family Radio and India Partners are teaming up to provide a safe house outside the city where young boys are rescued. With your gift of just $7.08, you provide a day of safety and shelter at a new India Partners safe house. Coming up here on American Family Radio, we're going to show you how your gifts can rescue a boy and make this new safe house a reality. Learn more at AFR.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's a controversy brewing in Miami, Florida, involving the Catholic Church and gay rights leaders. First grade teacher Jocelyn Morphy was fired after she married her same-sex partner. Miss Morphy was a popular teacher at St. Peter and St. Paul Catholic School. The Archdiocese said she was fired for violating her contract. Every teacher in the school was required to sign a contract vowing to respect and honor the teachings, traditions, and procedures of the Catholic Church. Critics accused the church of discrimination. Miami-Dade County has a law on the books protecting LGBT residents from discrimination, but religious institutions are exempt. One local group says they plan on pushing lawmakers to remove the exemption. Should that happen, it would put local congregations at the mercy of the gay community. And many churches would have to decide to either follow the tenets of their faith or risk running afoul of discrimination laws. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
It's not entirely clear that Minority Leader Chuck Schumer understands that they're supposed to be negotiating, because while they try to figure this out with some deal on DACA and a wall, here is what Schumer says he wants to narrow the focus.
Now is not the time nor the place to reform the entire legal immigration system. Rather, this is the moment for a narrow bill.
Whatever they come up with, it has to have 60 votes to pass, and the president has to be willing to sign it. And so a group of seven GOP senators say their plan is the best chance at it. It has a path to citizenship for the Dreamers in exchange for $25 billion for border security and a wall. It limits chain migration in the visa lottery system. This is an open-ended, rare debate. It could last all week, even all month, possibly. But with Senator Schumer saying he doesn't necessarily want to negotiate, it's going to be very interesting.
It is going to be very interesting. Sandy Rios back with you. My understanding is that the Senate has filed cloture to go full steam ahead on these votes. Meanwhile, we heard two different things in the clips that I just played. Chuck Schumer seemed all excited about it in the last clip in Mike Emanuel's report last night. This is a great time, you know, maybe we're going to work together and come up with something. And I told you, I was nervous about Chuck Schumer favoring any bill written in the Senate. But now this morning, he's reversing, at least late last night. I don't know when. Somehow, he has a different view. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But tabling that, we know that there are some seven senators working on a bill. There are other bills in the Senate that are being considered. We want to talk about those. Meanwhile, in the House, the bill that we have discussed for a couple of, probably a month here, is the Goodlatte bill, which is the one that we thought was going to be the leading bill, which is actually probably an excellent bill that many of us can embrace. But really, I don't think it's anything like the bill that's being worked upon, crafted by our senators. And we should be a little nervous about that, because the Senate, the House is a much more likely to speak on behalf of the American people, with the exception of its leader, Paul Ryan, than is the Senate. Mark Krikorian is the president of the Center for Immigration Studies and always the expert on this, and I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Let's talk about those bills in the Senate first. I think most of the focus is on this bill by these seven senators, but before we get to that one, isn't there a proposal by some of them to just talk about building a wall, maybe discuss it, more studies, and to give amnesty to DACA residents of this country?
Just to explain what's going on, Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican leader in the Senate, what he did is he took a House bill. The House had passed some small funding bill. So because it had funding in it originally, he could then put new measures that also included funding, and that would follow the rules. But he stripped all of the language out of it, so it's an empty bill with just a number.
Oh,
and what's happening this week is everybody is offering their own bills as amendments to this bill, which has nothing in it. In other words, it's a shell, and they're voting on what are they going to fill this shell bill with. And one of the provisions, like you said, is the bill that basically follows the White House framework, and the White House worked with several of the senators putting it together. But you're right that there are a lot of other proposals that are trying to do a lot less. And specifically, I think the one you were talking about is the one introduced, or it's not introduced yet, because these are all kind of proposals and press releases, but they're putting it together by, you will not be surprised, John McCain and Democratic Senator Coons from Delaware. And what that would do is give amnesty not just to the people with the DACA work permits now, which I'm for. That's a defensible thing. It's a mess the president inherited from Obama, and I think there's a case to make for cleaning that up. That's 700,000 people. What McCain's proposal would do is give amnesty to something like 3 million people. In other words, not just the ones with the DACA work permits now, but another maybe 2.5 million people on top of that. And there would be no wall. There would be a study of what should be done at the border. I mean, it's almost like a parody, like a cartoon parody of what you would expect a guy like McCain to respond in this kind of situation.
You know, I thought he was really sick. That's all I can say. I don't understand why he... Is it his staff that's doing this?
I assume so, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now, that doesn't mean he wouldn't want to do it, but it's just... Okay. All right, so, but the bill that's getting most attention in the Senate right now, and you just alluded to it, is this, what, Secure and Succeed Act?
Right. Yeah, this is the White House bill, basically, is what it amounts to.
You think that it is, actually?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, it follows, it tracks the White House, a framework that the White House released. And, I mean, I know the White House has worked with Senator Grassley, who's the head of the Judiciary Committee. He's basically the main one in charge here. Also, Senator Cotton has signed on to this as the only thing that's actually likely to get 60 votes and, conceivably also get approved by the House. So this is definitely a White House bill. There's a lot of, I have real problems with it. I mean, I wrote a piece at National Review criticizing the White House framework, which, like I said, this bill just puts flesh on those bones. But it's, it's better than anything else in the Senate, that's for sure, although it's not nearly as good as the Goodlatte bill, as you suggested, the one in the House of Representatives.
Does it limit the amnesty to the 700,000 or so recipients that you talked about, or does it go broader than that?
No, it goes broader than that, which tells you how bad the other bills are in the Senate, because this is the least bad bill. It would amnesty an estimated 1.8 million people. So roughly a million people on top of the ones who already have these DACA work permits. And I've talked to the people in the White House about this, and they see this as a kind of sweetener to try to get the Democrats to go along with it. Senator Grassley, in talking about it yesterday on the Senate floor, said, you know, he wasn't particularly happy about this either, but, you know, everybody's got to give something, is the way he put it. You know, it's going to be a compromise. So anyway, yes, it goes well beyond. And a piece I had yesterday at National Review, I questioned if you're going to expand beyond the people who have these work permits now. In other words, people who came before age 16 is the rule, and you've been here for 5 years or more. Well, that was the way DACA worked. And like I said, it's a mess that that Obama left for the current administration. They've got to clean it up. But if you're going to expand it, why would you use the same rules, the same parameters as Obama's DACA? Why not, if you're going to make a case for this, and I think there is a case to make maybe, why not extend this only to people who came before, say, age 7 and have lived here for 10 years? That's a lot more defensible as far as, you know, kids who don't even know they're illegal aliens, and they grow up and they get to high school and they find out they can't get a driver's license, you know, that sort of thing. They never knew it. They don't remember Mexico. Those are the talking points that the pro-amnesty people always make. But the proposal that they're pushing includes people who came at 15 years old. And then at 21, they're somehow magically, you know, can never go back home and they forget everything about their home countries. That's absurd.
The other part about this that they say they're ending the diversity visa lottery, but what they're doing, according to what I'm reading, and I don't, you know, I'm not the expert on this, Mark. I just understand the concept, is that they're transferring those visas to other people. So they're reducing the numbers. They're just calling it something different and reallocating. Is that what the president had in mind?
That's on the visa lottery. Yes, that's what they talked about, is that, you know, they're getting rid of this is 50,000 green cards a year at random to people around the world. They're getting rid of it, but they're reallocating those green cards. So this is the kind of thing that you would expect politicians to do. But again, they were upfront about it and said, look, this is a concession they're trying. In other words, they were almost negotiating with themselves before they came out with this. But even worse is the getting rid of the chain migration categories, which probably in the long run is even more important than getting rid of the lottery. In other words, the categories where you can sponsor, if this immigrant comes here, becomes a citizen, he can sponsor his siblings and the sibling spouses and the siblings' kids. And then when they come and get citizenship, they can sponsor their relatives. Mm-hmm. So it goes on and on. That's why I call it chain migration. Well, this bill, the White House bill, would get rid of those categories, which is good, but would grandfather in everyone who's already on the waiting list to come in under these categories, which is 4 million people. So there wouldn't actually be any reduction in immigration for at least 10 years. We think probably more like 15 if you count all the people getting amnesties. In other words, the reduction wouldn't account for all of the extra green cards from the amnesty for about 15 years. Well, you know, that's a long time from now. And, you know, President Kamala Harris, or whoever it ends up being, God forbid, is easily going to be able to undo things like that, I'm afraid, anyway, if they put it off that long.
Well, why wouldn't you not be afraid? We know what Obama did. It was totally lawless. And now we're codifying the lawlessness of the president, the previous president. But, Mark, let's go back to procedure here, because now did they vote to – they got the cloture vote and they're going to proceed to votes? Did I understand that correctly?
The vote they had yesterday was just a vote to proceed to debate and consider amendments. So all that was kind of teeing up the debate. So nothing has been approved. It's just that they voted to kick off the process and get started today.
All right. So, again, to repeat what you said – unlike most bills where there's text and people might add a sentence or two or an idea or two, this is like starting from scratch And as I understand it, Senator McConnell promised anybody can bring up anything, right? It's going to be like a free-for-all, don't you think?
Yeah, it will be. It'll be interesting. I assume at some point there's going to be some limit on the number of amendments or something, but the whole point was to, you know, give everybody a shot to see if they could get 60 votes. I think that's why Chuck Schumer was so excited, because he knows that he's got several Republicans in his pocket. And, you know, that's the danger, is that he could come up with something that would get all the Democratic votes, and then he would need, what does he need? He needs 11, I guess, Republicans to, you know, to get anything, you know, to get approved, because they're having a 60-vote threshold. And, you know, I'm afraid there might be 11 Republicans who basically are collaborators with the Democrats on the immigration issue. So it's you know, there's opportunity, but there's also real risk here.
You know, it seems to me like a mirror of what we just saw happen on the budget, Mark, where the Senate votes for this, and I don't even know, I can't even describe, I might not get the order of things here right because I didn't follow it that closely, but just in general, they claimed, the legislators claimed they were following the president's lead. And so they came up with this budget. They give it to the House, and Paul Ryan, who prior to this had pledged he would not bring legislation to the floor that his caucus did not approve of, broke that pledge last week, and with the help of Democratic votes, passed this enormous bill, which gave Democrats, it put us in such jeopardy financially for the future. Okay, so I can see this happening on immigration, because Paul Ryan's all about, this is, man, he must be laughing to himself at his great fortune, because he's going to take this bill in the House and say, look, this, we're just following what the president wants, so here it is. And so it won't matter. There's no embarrassment to pulling from the left to get votes to pass this. Do you see it any differently than that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a real danger. That's the problem. And the evidence that suggests that that might be what ends up happening is that that Speaker Ryan is not really pushing the Goodlatte bill, which is the, you know, the more conservative, much better bill in the House of Representatives. Congressman Goodlatte's the head of the Judiciary Committee, so he's a part of leadership. It's co-sponsored by the head of Homeland Security Committee, who, you know, this is No Wall McCall, I call him. I'm not real fond of him, but the fact is he's the top guy on the two committees that matter, have co-sponsored this bill. And Paul Ryan hasn't killed it, but he said, well, you know, we'll send the leadership around and we'll talk it up to people. In other words, instead of actually what they call whipping the bill, in other words, lobbying their own members to support it before you have a vote. This is, you know, they call that whipping legislation. Instead of doing that, they're just kind of, you know, lackadaisically listening to what people have to say about the bill. My point here is that Speaker Ryan is not making a real effort to pass a conservative bill in the House, so that if there's a Senate bill, which won't be as good if anything passes, they at least will be in a position when the House and Senate people meet to negotiate on what the agreed upon bill would be. They'll be in a position to pull the Senate bill to the right. That's not going to happen if the House doesn't pass the Goodlatte bill and just waits for the Senate to send them something.
I don't think we have any real reason to think that Paul Ryan would rush ahead and pass the Goodlatte bill. I just don't see it, Mark, especially with the success he had in passing that budget bill last week using this, as I described, we're just doing what the president wants. And so, for the Freedom Caucus, this is just because Paul Ryan is willing to work with the Democrats to pass terrible legislation, it really minimizes their effect. We only have 30 seconds. Is there anything people can do?
What I'd recommend is, if you're interested in immigration, my organization, CIS.org, is a think tank. But the best citizen activist group is called Numbers USA. You look at numbersusa.com, and they are the best group to get involved with and make your voice heard, after you learn what you should do by checking out my website at cis.org.
CIS.org. We'll do that. We'll put your article also from National Review up on our Facebook page. Mark Kerkorian, thank you so much, as always.
Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. The House Intelligence Committee's FISA memo and Senator Chuck Grassley's memo referring Christopher Steele to the FBI for a criminal investigation revealed that the FBI knowingly used Steele's trash dossier to secure search warrants to spy on American citizens. We also know the Clinton campaign and the DNC not only paid for the dossier's creation, the Clintons actually fed false information to Steele via the State Department to be included in the dossier. The greatest threat to the American Republic is not external. It is internal implosion.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is Tim Armstrong from the Worthy Walk radio program, inviting you to join us as we study the scriptures verse by verse each day, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. We will study the Word of God and learn to apply its truths to our lives each day. The Worthy Walk, Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time on American Family Radio.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Hi, this is Kirk Cameron, and I am honored to be partnering with the Ministry of Preborn and American Family Radio to help moms choose life.
Actor Kirk Cameron supports Preborn.
My four oldest children were adopted. That is because of caring and compassionate people who help those young mothers choose life. My wife is an adopted child, and her birth mother chose life for her. If it weren't for those caring individuals that help those young moms value the sacredness of life, I wouldn't have my wife, I wouldn't have my four adopted children, and the two natural born children that we have wouldn't exist either. My whole family is here because of people that are involved with ministries like Preborn.
Underwrite a free ultrasound and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. It says a lot about what has become of what was once called the world's greatest deliberative body that it's news when the United States Senate begins an open-ended debate. Instead of real deliberation, most of the Senate's business these days involves set-piece speeches delivered to an empty chamber, punctuated by votes on massive pieces of legislation cobbled together in secret by unaccountable staff and unread by virtually any senator. It's not clear the debate on immigration getting underway today will produce something better. Given the Senate's membership, we will likely see bipartisan majorities in favor of things most Americans abhor, like amnesty for illegal aliens and continued chain migration, and against what most want, notably a truly secure southern border. If such measures can get at least 60 votes in the Senate, will the House of Representatives and President Trump demand better? This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Happy to be, by the way, and also happy to be partnering with India Partners on their attempt to provide shelter and clothing and just get these kids out of the red light districts in India. The little kids are being trafficked as young as 8 o'clock, as young as 8 years old. And so it's just horrendous, really unthinkable, and you could imagine how destructive it is to their lives. You know, we have so much sexual abuse in this country now, it's not that hard to fathom anymore. There was a time when you didn't hear this kind of conversation. Didn't mean it didn't exist, but it wasn't as rampant. I think pornography has just caused it to balloon and become prevalent in families and neighborhoods. It's just, may God help us. We know what Jesus said about harming these little ones. It would be better if a millstone were tied around your neck and you were thrown to the bottom of the sea. That's how Jesus said, spoke up about this whole thing. And not just sex, but you mislead little ones. But I'm sure he meant this for sure. And so this breaks his heart. It breaks ours too. India Partners is in the process of helping these kids. $7.08 provides one day of safety, rescue, and care for a child escaping the red light areas of Mumbai. A day in a safe house includes full room and board, full-time Christian school, private tutoring, medical attention, counseling, and sharing the love of Jesus. So how many days do you think you could provide for a child? $7.08 is just one day. So you do the multipliers and just do the very best that you can under your circumstances. Be generous if you can, as generous as you can, again, given your limitations or given the blessings that God has given you. They're working on providing a safe house for the boys right now. And so if you can help, call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or you can give online at afr.net. All right, so much to say. This morning, over just in the last, from my knowledge anyway, 24 hours or less, there was another breaking story on national security, and this involved Susan Rice. I'll let Todd Pirro from Fox and Friends First this morning tell you about it.
While the nation watched Donald Trump be sworn into office, apparently ex-National Security Advisor Susan Rice was emailing herself, documenting a meeting involving President Obama. According to Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Chuck Grassley and Senator Lindsey Graham, the January 5th meeting included Obama, then FBI Director James Comey, then Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, then Vice President Joe Biden, and Rice. And the topic, how law enforcement should investigate Russian interference in the 2016 election. In this email, Rice wrote, quote, President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities by the book. The president stressed that he is not asking about initiating or instructing anything from a law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would, again, that expression, by the book. End quote. Rice's attorney responded as follows. There is nothing unusual about the National Security Advisor memorializing an important discussion for the record. But Senator Graham doesn't see it that way.
What brought on that conversation on January the 5th? They knew they were going to be out of power just in days. They sent an email trail showing that the president was instructing everybody doing it by the book. And when you look at what happened, it was an abuse of power, not by the book. So this is really odd.
The senators sent Rice a letter asking her to answer several questions about that email. So the plot thickens, guys.
Okay, so what's the big deal, you might ask? Well, I think what they're not saying is that it appears as though Susan Rice sent herself an email stating what she claimed the president said in that meeting to cover for what was actually happening. Because we know that what was going on behind the scenes was so completely unlawful. We also know, we have indications now that the president knew all about this. Remember Devin Nunes, when he came out initially last spring, I think it was, maybe may have been in the fall, who knows, time moves so quickly, and came out in front of the White House and was pretty stunned. It was last spring, I'm pretty sure, or last summer, stunned by what he had seen. And what he had seen was a 24-page spreadsheet on the people that were being surveilled by intelligence agencies and names. And they were being, and this was a spreadsheet that was given to the president. So we know that President Obama knew all about this. His name has been not mentioned too much in these reports, and neither has Loretta Lynch's. But trust me, they're up to their ears in this. And we're going to be finding out more and more about it. The people under them, all these services, including the FBI, would not be doing what they were doing without the knowledge of the president and his Justice Department. But we'll come back to that because I think that the facts will reveal themselves. By the way, Susan Rice is going to be called in front of the Intelligence Committee. Devin Nunes, that's his part two of this investigation. I should do this one right now. I've got two big basic stories I want to share with you, which are just stunning. They really are just stunning. And we'll post both of them on our Facebook page. The first one is from Real Clear Investigations. That's the same as Real Clear Politics. And it says the title is exclusive, CIA Director, Ex-Director Brennan's Perjury Peril. And it tells the story. Now, I've told you that John Brennan is, from my perspective, a nefarious character. I've told you that he voted for the communist candidate for president back during the Cold War. I think it was 1980 when he voted for the Communist Party candidate. It might have been 76. I have been told, and this has not been verified, but I've been told by two different sources that he converted to Islam when he was the head of the Saudi Arabia Bureau for the CIA. A person that worked with him, let's see. I'll read you what he had to say about him. Someone who was a contemporary with, I'll find it in the article somewhere. But basically he said he can't be trusted. He lies about everything. But, you know, we'll find this out, won't we? And this is the story out of Real Clear Investigations. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes next plans to investigate the role of former CIA Director John Brennan and other Obama intelligence officers, how they officials played in promoting the salacious and unverified Steele dossier on Donald Trump, including whether John Brennan perjured himself in public testimony about it. And then it goes to, it's very, it's not that complicated, but it's just long and tedious. Well, it's an interesting read, but I mean, it's a lot of detail that I can't share with you on the air. It would take too much time, but I'll read a little bit. In his May 2017 testimony before the intelligence panel, Brennan emphatically denied that the dossier factored into the intelligence community publicly released conclusion last year that Russia meddled in the 2016 election to help Trump's chances of victory. And quite the opposite is true. We're learning from these memos that the intelligence agencies depended on this fake dossier prepared and paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign and the DNC. Unverified. Also, we know that now it wasn't so much Christopher Steele's investigation. By the way, he had not set foot in Russia in 25 years, as it was an operative. That's the kindest word I can think of. An operative of the Clintons for a long time who was known for writing tabloid and like stories and also discrediting people. That had been his role. And so we know now that he was actually giving information to the British spy Christopher Steele, who was then writing it in this Steele dossier. It's just incredible. And we know for a fact from the Devin Nunes memo that was released last week that the intelligence agencies did depend on that. So John Brennan was not telling the truth when he said that in testimony before the intelligence panel. Brennan also swore that he did not know who commissioned the anti-Trump research document, even though senior national security and counterintelligence officials at the Justice Department and FBI knew the previous year that the dossier was funded by the Hillary Clinton campaign. I could run ahead on this and just tell you that basically, though, we know that John Brennan was actually fundamental to getting the dossier out, that he was the man that made it possible for the information to get to the press and to be widely reported. He was the one who slipped the information into the presidential daily briefing. And what does that mean? That means that made it possible for it to be leaked to the press. So, you know, but he doesn't know about it. He had no idea. He didn't know who wrote it, you know, and it wasn't the only thing that made them think that the Russians had interfered. See, the irony is that the Russians did try to interfere, but they tried to interfere by helping Hillary Clinton. And so I remember when I told you, and please remember this, kind of make it part of your understanding of what's happening. Whenever the left accuses the right, I hate those terms, but I don't know what other terms to use. Whenever the left accuses the right, to me, the good people, the honest brokers of doing something, it's because when they scream loudly about something, it's because they are guilty of the same thing. That's how they cover it up. It's a tactic of the left. It's very effective. And so that's what they were doing. Oh, the Russians interfered with the election. They knew good and well that they themselves were working with the Russians. That dossier came out of Russia, was in cooperation with the Russians. And by the way, just to clarify, just to make sure you understood this point, when they talked about the Russians releasing Hillary Clinton's email, that was never verified. The FBI under Comey did not even go into the DNC server. They allowed a private operative who was tied to the Clinton campaign to go in and to tell the FBI then, oh, we're pretty sure it was hacked by the Russians. But the FBI never verified it themselves. And we know from other sources, I talked about that quite a bit several months ago, that there were lots of other sources for that information. And it could have been, as a matter of fact, the staffer that ended up being murdered on the streets of D.C. who had access to all the email of the Clinton of the he was working on the Clinton campaign or at the DNC, as I recall. Seth, his first name was Seth. And then we also know that WikiLeaks claimed that Seth indicated that they thought Seth had been the responsible person. But we also know that those two IT specialists, Pakistani IT specialists, I can't believe I said that. Let's just say the IT workers that were working for the head of the DNC from Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, are totally criminal. They fled the country. They stole thousands of dollars and they had access to every single email that has been exposed. And so that whole thing was a lie too, a complete sham. So that's a great article. I wish I could go further with it, but I have something else I want to tell you about. We'll put that on our Facebook page so you can read it. Byron York has a stunning piece in the Washington Examiner from yesterday. And basically he tracks the firing of Michael Flynn and the fact that Michael Flynn confessed to lying to the FBI, and did they really? And what Byron says, and I think you should read this too, honestly, Jim Comey, when he was FBI director, told Congress that FBI agents who interviewed him did not think Michael Flynn had lied. And so members of Congress thought that Michael Flynn hadn't done anything wrong. Remember, they set him up with two FBI agents who came to his office even before, I believe, this might have been right after the inauguration. It might have been just before. I'm not sure. But they were in transition. And Michael Flynn was called and said two agents were coming over. He thought that they were coming over to discuss security measures. They were all working out. It was all new. They instead started interrogating him, and he didn't have an attorney. Well, those two agents, according to Byron's report here, didn't think that Flynn lied in that. They reported back to the FBI that he didn't. Comey testified before the committee that they didn't think Flynn had lied. And then suddenly, when James Comey is gone, And Sally Yates is installed at the Justice Department as the temporary acting attorney general, they bring up charges against General Flynn on this ridiculous, what they're using as a basis is the Logan Act, which is a 218-year-old law. I'm sure you heard about this. A 218-year-old law under which no one had ever been successfully prosecuted. It's so, as we have said many times before, suddenly Mueller then comes in and charges Michael Flynn with lying to the FBI. When according to Comey and according to stuff that Byron has pulled up here, I knew that one agent didn't think he had lied. I didn't know both didn't. Both thought he hadn't lied. So this is just an incredible story. We'll put this on our Facebook page too. Byron York, Comey told Congress FBI agents didn't think Michael Flynn lied. For now, Mueller has put Michael Flynn's case on hold. The judge has put Michael Flynn's case on hold. Remember, the judge recused himself. Contreras. Is this not interesting? You know, will justice be done? Only with God's help, really. Only with God, who's the God of all truth. And it seems to me that the God of all truth is having his way right now in exposing these lies. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.